Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Want to say a huge thank you out to Loot Crate for being a show sponsor for today's broadcast. If you're not familiar with Loot Crate, I'm really glad they're a part of the broadcast. They're a great fit for this audience because we have a lot of gamers and a lot of nerds and geeks and people who just follow pop culture stuff. Everything from Harry Potter to Marvel Comics to Fallout 4, Star Wars, Star Trek, and so much more. And that's what Loot Crate essentially is. It's a monthly subscription box service that ships to your door. A box full of random, epic, geek, and gamer items and pop culture gear. I mean, t-shirts, action figures, comics, miscellaneous stuff, exclusive collectibles you can't get anywhere else. And a different theme every single month. And the theme for August is the anti-hero. Featuring a 100% exclusive collection of items from DC Comics, Archer, Dark Horse, Kill Bill, and much more. Now, the cutoff for this month's theme is 9 p.m. Pacific on the 19th of August. So move quickly, $3 off any new Loot Crate subscription when you log on to lootcrate.com/Seth Andrews and use my name as the promo code. So check it out, lootcrate.com/Seth Andrews, promo code Seth Andrews. I'm getting set to hit the road again. I'm going back out west, and I hope I get a chance to see you there. I'm taking some tour stops to California. We're going to do kind of what we did last year and had great success with it, kind of a north to south run. Going to start the day after Labor Day. That's Tuesday, September 6th, in Sacramento, followed by San Jose, San Luis Obispo, Riverside, and wrapping up the weekend in San Diego, California. Also in October, on the 8th, I'll be in Hot Springs, Arkansas. And at the end of October, Great Lakes Reason Fest is going to be happening in Detroit, Michigan. And all the details on all those events are at thethinkingatheist.com/events. Hope I get a chance to shake your hand. We're coming up on our 300th broadcast, my friends. It's hard to believe. 300 shows, that's a big number. I'm a little bit stunned, I'm overwhelmed by it, and I'm hugely honored to be able to do what I do and to have gotten this far. We are consistently ranking, even today, my friends, in the top three shows broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. Not atheist shows, not shows that deal with religion. I mean shows. And they have about 15,000 active hosts. We are consistently in the top three, and that's because of you. It's because you listen, because you share links and tell your friends and participate in the broadcast. You are the lifeblood of this show. So as we head toward the big 300, I want to make sure that I never neglect the people who made it possible, the people who have been there with me and for me over these past 6 years. Thank you. I have no idea how we're going to mark the 300th episode. I've been toying with the idea of maybe finding a hub city. I'm not going to do it in Oklahoma, of all places, but maybe going to Dallas or Chicago, Denver, Atlanta, something like that. Maybe doing a live event, have a bunch of people come out. Maybe we can have everybody bring some canned goods and we'll try to feed some hungry mouths and do some charity work while we're hanging out and enjoying each other's company. Just make a thing out of it. I don't know. I'm not really sure what to do for show number 300. I'm going to try to work it out as soon as possible and get the word out about whatever that will be well before we hit 300, which I think is going to be in November. So it's coming up, and thank you again for making it possible. My show tonight features an author, a journalist, an activist who is making a splash out there with his challenges, direct challenges to Christianity, the Bible, and religion in general. His name is David G. McAfee. And this is the conversation we had about his life, his activism, his work, his books, and specifically a book called The Book of gods. Enjoy. David, how's it going, man?
It's going great over here. Thank you very much, Seth. I appreciate you having me.
I want to start off by thanking you for reminding me that I'm not the only person with a baby face in the movement. People look at me, David, and they're
yeah,
like,
"Yeah, you're definitely welcome, people."
You're 12, Seth. What's the, you know, how could, who are you? Where did you come from? You know, do your parents know you're on the internet? I hear this. I'm hearing it a little less these days, but you know, you definitely. How old are you, may I ask, David?
Yeah, I'm 27.
Okay, and you have already contributed. How many books have you authored?
4 books now that have been published and are out and available.
All right, give me your resume real fast. I mean, what are the books? What are they about?
All right. So I graduated from University of California, Santa Barbara with 2 degrees, one in religious studies and one in English. And so I use those degrees to write Disproving Christianity. My first book is a book critiquing biblical literalism. Mom, Dad, I'm an Atheist, The Guide to Coming Out as a Non-Believer. That one's pretty self-explanatory. And then I have 2 children's books, The Belief Book and The Book of Gods, which are co-authored with Chuck Harrison, who also did the illustrations for them.
Well, the reason I'm talking to you today is because, I mean, all of them intrigue me as you talk about them. I was aware of Disproving Christianity, but The Book of Gods, and it's something for young people, for young minds to sort of explore the idea of, I mean, do you just say it's myth outright? Do you use questions? How do you approach gods when you're writing to children?
Basically, what I did was I used what I learned in college in a comparative religious studies setting, and I'm just kind of translating that for children. So it's not an atheist manifesto where I tell everyone that every god is fake or anything, but we really just talk about the stories, where they come from, how they evolved over time, why people believe them. So it's really as unbiased as possible, coming from somebody who has an academic background in religious studies, as opposed to just telling people that gods are fake or that gods are real. It's neither of those, really.
Well, I mean, you've got an agenda. I mean, we've all got an agenda, right? You're writing the books for a reason. You're trying to. I love comparative religions tactics, by the way. I think I had said somewhere, and someone said that it has been used as a reference elsewhere, that religion is often like going to a Mexican food restaurant. You know, if you order a taco, what do you get? You get a tortilla, meat, cheese, lettuce, tomato. If you get a tostada, what are you getting? Well, you get a tortilla, meat, cheese, lettuce, and tomato, right? What, if you order a certain kind of burrito, it's a tortilla, meat, cheese, lettuce, and tomato. They're taking the same ingredients, but they're arranging them in different ways. But it's mostly the same stuff. Most religions are sort of operating with the same fundamentals, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I would never say I don't have an agenda. My agenda is to teach people about religions, teach people about their histories, where they come from, how they influence one another, and how they influence our lives today. And when you talk about the religions and their similarities and differences, the fundamentals, you're exactly right. They all have these templates, and they just kind of fill it with different gods or different dogmas or different texts, depending on their cultural understandings. And that's what I think makes it interesting, learning about those specifics and those differences and how they spread from one religion to another and how those religions grow over time and how they sometimes cause disasters for the rest of us.
They're doing a different interpretive dance to kind of the same tune, right? They've got an origin of the universe story. They've got an origin of humankind story. They usually have a savior deity of some kind. They have a holy text. They have a paradise. They have a pain or consequence for not choosing this deity. You know, they have their synagogues and churches and mosques and what have you. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that just sort of overlaps when you look at them side by side.
Oh, definitely. And more often than not, that's exactly how it is. And there are obviously exceptions to each of those, but mostly they're pretty standard in how they appear to the rest of us, which makes it increasingly funny or interesting when people say that atheism is a religion, because it has none of those things that you just mentioned.
I think it's their way of trying to bring us down to their level, right? I mean, and it's not, was it Tracy Harris who said, is that really the best defense that you have for your faith? Like, you're just another religion. You're no better than us. And I think to myself, is that really what you want to lead with in the defense of your faith? Because it sounds pretty weak.
I've said that exact same thing, and I completely agree. And they do the same with the word faith. You have more faith than all of us. Well, I thought faith was a good thing a minute ago when you were using it, but now that we have faith, it's terribly divisive. You want to get rid of it. It is interesting how they kind of demonize their own ideas.
It's funny, David, I'm re-listening to, I've read, one of my favorite books is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy with Douglas Adams, a voice that is tremendously missed, right? And he was always taking those tweaks at God. In all of his writings, he's always sort of throwing those little jabs in. And he has that line about how, you know, the facts or proof essentially flies in the face of faith. I mean, if they're facts, you don't require faith. It's contradictory. And then, of course, God disappears in a puff of logic. I've always enjoyed watching the tap dance because they say, I believe it because I have to take it on faith. But I also am grasping for proofs, right? They're scanning the cosmos. They're scanning our genome to give us hard data on something that we're supposed to not require hard data for. It's weird.
It's very true. I've seen a lot of people go down that exact same path, and it's because we have this desire, this innate desire to know, but we also have this innate desire to want to find out. So when we have both of these conflicting things, a lot of people choose to pretend to know and then still kind of keep their eye out in the meantime. And you and I, other people just don't work that way. We just don't want to pretend to know in the first place. And so I think that's a little bit better of a method, but it is fun to watch, that's for sure.
Well, how come you're such a pain in the ass about this subject, man? I mean, how come you're stirring the pot out there like the rest of us are? Were you formerly religious and now you're speaking out against, or what drives it?
I was never religious. I did grow up in a family of Christians. My parents and grandparents were all Christians. It comes more out of a desire for people to understand religions, and I want people to understand religions, what they believe and why they believe it, because right now I think most people are just kind of working on autopilot and they're just taking whatever their parents told them and they're just running with it and clinging to it. And I think if more people just sat down and thought about different religions and how they do have the same origins and the same fundamental beliefs and doctrines, then people wouldn't, I mean, it would be a less dangerous world. There'd be less fundamentalism, less people clinging to really anti-mainstream versions of their religions that cause crime and terrorism and stuff like that. So I think religious education is just a good way to kind of not only reduce religiosity, which it will, fewer people identify as religious in countries where religions are taught, but it will also help people be, when they are religious, less fundamentalist about it.
Now, the cultural Christians are a great example. I mean, they make me crazy. But I'm not too worried about the they're almost deists. Mm-hmm. I think there's something out there. It gives me comfort. I want to see grandma again when I die. I mean, those people aren't the people largely who are trying to change law or trying to affect governmental law or public policy in order to push their faith on the rest of us. They're not the ones dragging poor children into these houses of indoctrination to pound Jesus or whatever into them. You know, they're largely just part of this happy, clappy Joel Osteen, aren't I special, aren't I a beautiful person kind of a religion. Those people they're not the ones out there doing the most damage, I would think.
I completely agree. I think, I can think of many people in my family who would fit that description.
They still make you crazy, David, don't they? Talking to them does make you literally occasionally want to just claw your own eyeballs out, because I think... How do you know? Well, I just know. I mean, and that's as far as we go. I know because I know it's true because it is. I know it in my heart. Meanwhile, if you say, hey, here's an Islamist who knows in his heart, they're like, I'm not going to take that one.
I'll be the first person to say exactly what you're saying, that the people who are just, I've called them cultural Christians as well, in disproving Christianity, cultural, whatever the religion is of the area, and they don't tend to cause the most problems. But there is the problem of them identifying with, for example, Christianity, and then somebody else, powerful leadership figure who is at that helm as a Christian, could then more easily funnel them into doing his bidding. I don't know if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, they're so easily pandered to
right? Yeah, exactly.
Some charismatic, God-speaking so-and-so comes along and they'll just drift right along. That sort of casual cultural religion is enough to cause the sheep to lead that particular or follow that particular shepherd right over the cliff, you know?
That's exactly
it. I mean, it's I want to make sure that I'm clear because I'm glad you gave me the chance to clarify. I'm not saying it's innocuous and it's not dangerous for people to check out of these conversations and assume a cultural belief. But, you know, the more fundamentalist, what was that saying? If the people distancing themselves from fundamentalism, you know, if you have to distance yourself from the fundamentals of your religion, there's probably something wrong with your religion's fundamentals, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Talk to me about the Book of Gods. What is it? Is it illustrated? Is it big? Is it small? Is it hardcover? What is it?
All right. So the Book of Gods is paperback. It's relatively short. It's less than 100 pages, 96 pages with big print on each page because it's for children. I say it's for children, but I've recommended it to adults as well if they really just want to get an understanding of what gods are around the world and where they came from. But basically, it's a sequel for the Belief Book, which we introduced beliefs, religions in general, and how to form good beliefs based on evidence. And then the Book of the Gods picks up that baton and talks about all the different deities from different religions, where they come from, what powers they had, how you can create your own gods using your imagination. It is illustrated, and actually it's a color book too, so they can actually color in their own gods. And so, yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's an activity book. They have lots of dictionary definitions that pop up in there to describe what word they're learning because there's a lot of stuff that'll be new to them. But then there's also fun games, like I said, write your own stories, draw your own gods and stuff.
Yeah, you can decorate your own deity. I mean, it sounds like probably 80% of the Christian adult that I know in my life, they've just created their own sort of the Jesus that makes them personally comfortable. It's a personal, I mean, of course, it's going to be Jesus here in Oklahoma, right?
Oh, of course.
Everybody's yeah. Jesus is different than somebody else's Jesus by at least a little bit. And I'm always thinking, well, for a God, it's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's got some strange discrepancies in how he's described by his own children, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like when, I forgot his name. the guy who killed Trayvon Martin said that it was God's plan, and then his parents said, "Not my God," and they pray to the same deity. So I just thought that was kind of funny.
I did a speech, and I'm going to release it probably to YouTube in a few months, where we show that Jesus is in different cultures, different regions of the world. You know, there's like an Asian Jesus, there's like a Native American Jesus, yep. There's a black Jesus. I mean, everybody's, of course, the Middle Eastern Jesus, the most accurate one probably had there been a Jesus actually living on this earth, you know?
So. Yeah, that's awesome. And the Book of the Gods will give them a chance to color their Jesus or their flying spaghetti monster or anything else, any different color they want and any different additives. And yeah, the flying spaghetti monster is featured in there. It's a deity by all, for all intents and purposes now, so we used it.
How many gods are we talking about? How many deities are you throwing at these kids?
I think we cover about 50 in depth, and there's some lists that include other creator deities if they just want to investigate further. But I would say 50 where we cover where they come from and what they do and what their names are and stuff like that.
If I'd been a kid and I had seen all these things side by side, who knows how much faster I would have come to my senses. You know, I took a world we called it a world religions class.
Yep.
But it was more for us debate training. Like, here's why we're right, and here's all the other religions' basic tenets of their faith. But it was always couched in that those poor people, you know, they're so deceived. And when you run across them, here's how you debate them. It was essentially a debate training class, you know?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the reaction you had is perfect. That's exactly what I want people to think when they see the Book of the Gods, is if I had this as a kid, I don't even know how quickly the indoctrination would have come undone. And it's true because, like I said before, if you look at statistics from places in Europe where they have compulsory religious education, real religious education, not what you were experienced, you see people identifying with religion much, much less often, up to 50% instead of 87% here in the United States. And so teaching them those ideas is really the best way to go about it. And from an objective secular approach is the only real way to do it. And the world religions class that you were talking about is akin to something that even the Westboro Baptist Church does. They do a really impressive religious education for their members, but it's all teaching them flaws and inaccuracies and how to debate these people as opposed to teaching them on equal footing, which is what I'd like to do.
Strange that a benevolent deity would require any kind of apologetics to make him make sense. I hear this. I was talking to Dillahunty a few months ago about this guy. He's so smart. I mean, he really is. He's just brilliant. But he was talking about Jesus, and I was speaking about all of the contradictions and all of the real problems, all the confusion. The God who's not the author of confusion is really confusing. And I think he said something along the lines of, you know, I don't want a God who's so basic that I can figure him out. Like, I want a God who's so far beyond me that he remains mysterious. And this is how he tap danced around the fact that God really doesn't make sense. And he was perfectly content. I mean, it's maddening to hear this type of quote-unquote reasoning, but that was his. So.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a really good way to get around the hard thinking, get around the cognitive dissonance you're feeling, just chalk it up to mysterious ways. It's kind of a new way of phrasing that old same cliche. But realistically, you could say, well, the universe is so mysterious that you just don't understand it, and that's what's doing all this. So really, he's just, like you said, dancing around the issue.
What's that? We've all got our sort of pet causes or specific angles we take. You know, I'm an ex-Christian in the Bible Belt. Christianity is where I lean. We talk about lots of stuff, Islam and Scientology, and, you know, we get into having science-related guests on, and we talk about astrophysics with astrophysicists, those types of things. But what are the things that drive you? What's the fire in your belly? What kind of stuff is the area of your focus?
I'd say religious education is a huge part of it. I want to see the United States take a page out of the book from places in Europe that do teach religious education, even in high school, even in elementary school and middle school, where they give you the basics so you understand the world's most popular religions and where they come from. Because right now we leave it all to parents to decide what their children learn. And because we do that 100% in the United States, essentially, it makes it so that they're all indoctrinated and nobody gets any exposure to any other religion. So that's a huge part of it. Also, just skeptical activism in general when it comes to science and pseudoscience. I'm a big proponent of activism in that regard as well.
Like, not all atheists are skeptics kind of thing?
I just mean combating pseudoscience in general, but it's true that not all atheists are skeptics.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I've had to deal with a lot of pushback because I am a scientific skeptic, and a lot of people tell me that because I studied religion in college, that that's all I'm allowed to discuss, and I shouldn't go out of my comfort zone by talking about science in any other way. But I see them as the same. I mean, psychics, ghosts, all these other things are on the same footing as religion. They're just not as institutionalized.
I asked Lawrence Krauss about this. You know, we were talking, like, for those of us who aren't theoretical physicists, but we want to be a part of these conversations, you know, are we required to opt out? And his answer was absolutely not. I mean, we can't all speak to the level of a degreed theoretical physicist about these things, but we certainly can participate in this discussions. We can learn from and absorb the work of people who are peer-reviewed experts in their field, and we can read the work that's maybe those who disagree with them are producing. We can participate on some level in discussions about science without apology, and we should.
I completely agree. I mean, anybody with a reasonable understanding of how science works can look up peer-reviewed papers online, can look at conclusions, can look at their methods, and can do the work to decide if something is scientifically viable or if it's not. But I see a lot of people just kind of deferring to these news websites, conspiracy news websites, Real Pharmacy and Natural News and stuff, and they just say anything and people believe it. And they're like, a study backs it up, but nobody bothers to look at the study anymore.
So. Now, there's a website called Evolution News that somebody tossed at me the other day after watching a Donald Prothero speech showing the proofs of evolution. I mean, proof of evolution, the fact of evolution. Mm-hmm. And Evolution News, of course, is a cleverly sort of pseudo-disguised, I guess it's partially disguised, intelligent design site that's pitching itself as a science source. And it's tragic because I can think of about a dozen people who will visit this website and immediately start throwing those links out. You know, they just throw them at you like a grenade and say, here's proof. So
I've seen exactly that, and I agree with the grenade approach. They're just like, here you go and goodbye, and I'm like, well, no, you didn't look. And but by the time I have looked at it and reviewed it, they're gone, and they've but they feel good about what they've done, so it's okay for them.
Talk to me about this book you're writing. I'm not here just to sell David's books, but you know, I'm all about getting the work out, and you know, I'm hearing a lot of good stuff about you and what you do. Tell me about the thing that is coming up in 2017, would you?
Yep. No Sacred Cows is due out in March. It is No Sacred Cows exploring myths, cults, and the supernatural. And in it, I discuss everything from psychics to ghosts to alien visitation. I actually went undercover as a psychic for one of the chapters as under the pseudonym Suro the Seer, and I did some readings that way. I interviewed three professional celebrity psychics. I did a lot of ghost hunting. So I kind of really, I put about 5 years of investigative work into this book.
There's something else we have in common. We both used Sacred Cows as part of the title of one of our books. Go figure. Talk to me about speaking with these psychics.
It was definitely interesting. First, I tried to interview the Long Island medium, Teresa Caputo. She didn't respond to my calls or my emails, but I did get a couple of celebrity psychics here in Los Angeles. So that one of the benefits of living here in LA, I was able to just pay them their normal rate of $400 an hour.
$400 an hour? You and I are in the wrong business, David.
I know we are. And then I'm doing this undercover psychic work for free, and people are begging me to take their money too. They're like, you expended this work to give me this reading, so I'm giving. And I'm like, no, keep your money. And it was really difficult in a couple of instances to make them leave me alone.
Wait, did they realize at the time they were being sort of audited by this skeptic for the purposes of a book? Or
The psychic, her name's Justine, the celebrity psychic that I interviewed first. I paid her $400, and I told her that I just wanted to ask her some questions by email is how I approached her first. And she said, okay, great. Meet me at my house. And then about 30 minutes later, I get a follow-up email, and she's like, I just Googled your name, and I want to let you know that you found the wrong person, because you're not going to take me down. And you're not. And I guess she saw Disproving Christianity and thought I was going to do Disproving Psychics or something like that.
It sounds to me like you might be. Psychics, though.
I mean, maybe inadvertently, but really what I was doing was just asking basic questions about how she does her work. How do you get to these answers? What's your accuracy like? Basic journalism type questions that anybody would ask. And she did get defensive, but she also gave me some pretty enlightening answers and into her process. And I think by the end of if somebody believes in psychics and they read my psychic chapter, including I have three interviews with psychics. I have an interview with the mentalist, with two mentalists. I kind of really covered this topic well. And I think if you believe in psychics and you start from the beginning and get to the end, that you might question that based on their answers.
Dave, do you follow the work of Darren Brown at all?
I do. Darren Brown's amazing. He was the first mentalist that I tried to reach out to.
That guy is a genius. And I think he's also done a tremendous amount of good as far as showing people how easily we're duped, you know, setting it up so that there's no way he could have known that. And, you know, wink at you and say, this is all a trick. I'm not actually psychic. And as I understand it, he's an atheist, and, you know, he used to be a Christian, and now he's a flat out skeptic, and he's out helping to expose. He's like James Randi in many ways. He's helping to expose a lot of the people who are taking advantage of good people in their most vulnerable hours, you know.
He certainly is. And it's people like him and the people who I interviewed for the book, the other mentalists, that I really appreciate the work that they do, because they're able to be impressive and do the same great work that psychics do by convincing people that they have these magic powers. But then they squash it all at the end and say, we're just messing with your brain. We don't have any special powers. Thank you very much for your participation. I really respect that more than anything else.
Dave, did they offer you any details about your life? Did they make any predictions? Were they able to? I mean, we talk about the shotgun approach, the hits versus the misses, and how we so often will hear only the hits, those types of things. So
yeah,
did you go through that, and were you cognizant of the fact that, hey, that's actually pretty dead on?
Yes. One of the psychics that I spoke with, his name was Alvaro, and he had a really good record for his little guesses. Just he guessed that I was a writer, He guessed that I would travel a lot in my future. I mean, these are kind of basic, but he was right about a lot of stuff, but it was kind of just, I understood how he got to every answer he did, but he was good at guessing, and I appreciated his good tries.
Yeah, we are all sort of roadmaps, aren't we?
Yes.
They're reading us, they're assessing us in so many different ways, often without us realizing it. I was sitting in a reading. I went in for research of my own. We were doing a reading in Ocean Beach, California. And I remember the lady was talking about a future love interest. And at the entire time, my fiance was sitting in a chair right behind me. And I'm like, you know, how much trouble are you trying to get me in, lady? You know, that kind of thing. So it's always interesting to go through and watch them throw the shotgun approach at you. And then whatever sticks to the wall happens to be a prophetic power of some kind.
That's exactly true. And when I went to the second, when I went to Justine, she was worse with her guesses. And it's because I think she is a celebrity psychic who's she's done readings for Ellen DeGeneres, Eva Longoria, people like that, like really rich celebrity women. And so she was thrown off by me, a young guy, because her readings were very similar to what you'd give to. She was like, oh, I think I see a ring in your future to me, and I have no intention of getting married. So
yeah.
It's just interesting to see how she's used to this kind of normal demographic. And then I threw her off because she doesn't know what to say. She's focusing on love a lot and soulmates and marriage and stuff like that. She also said that my diagnosed mental illness, my obsessive compulsive disorder, is spirits attacking my mind. And she offered for an additional fee to get rid of those spirits. So that was nice of her, I guess.
It's interesting that you are so public about this. I know, you know, J.T. Eberhardt has spoken very publicly about his own battles with depression and anorexia, and has helped to encourage other people who are going through this type of thing, you know, removing the stigma from it, scientifically approaching it from, you know, as better human beings, as more informed human beings. You've come forward about OCD. How long has this been going on, and when did you first speak about it?
I've had OCD all my life, and I was diagnosed in middle school. But the first time I spoke about it was a couple of years ago. I was public about it on Facebook, and I've kind of been on my personal Facebook as opposed to my fan page. I've been more open about it there, talking about mental illnesses. Recently, in the past couple months, I've been opening up more in my public on my fan page, especially because I live in a house of three people, and we have between us OCD, depression, anxiety, body dysmorphia. We have a slew of mental illnesses, and the stigma is really the biggest problem because we can't talk about our issues without people assuming that we're all crazy. And
well, it's sad to say there are many people even under the atheist umbrella who are pretty insensitive. I happen to see a few comments online, and they were just ignorant and cruel. And I think, you know, to throw yourself out there like that is pretty ballsy, you know.
Just the other day when I posted something publicly about it, I would say about 10 of the comments weren't just disparaging me, but were saying that one said, I can't have OCD because I'm successful. I can't have a mental illness because I've done things with my life, but I've done things in spite of that.
That makes no sense. I'm trying to assess what their point is. I don't get that.
No, I don't know. They also said that I am just whining about it to get attention. And they've said, I mean, just all kinds of different things. But I'm really just trying to get it out there that this is a real problem and not something you can just write off as religious people have and as the psychic did, as spirits or ghosts. I mean, there's a scientific answer here and helps to focus on that.
I was going to come to that. The religious then say, well, of course, you've got some problems. You've rejected God, whoever my God happens to be. They're going to piggyback their deity on whatever challenges, health challenges you're facing. That really sucks, because now you're not just dealing with trying to get them out of magical thinking, but they're coming after you in a way personally in a very sensitive issue, you know.
It's one of the reasons that I took so long to start talking about it publicly was because I know how people work, and I know that they're going to think that any bad thing in my life or anything that's perceived as bad in my life can then be ammunition used by believers or people who want to say that I have a terrible life because I'm an atheist or whatever. And eventually I just decided that it was worth it. I mean, it would be hypocritical not to be open about it because I wrote Mom, Dad, I'm an Atheist because I said people needed to be more open about being an atheist so that they could help others come up and step up to the plate and do the same thing. And now I'd like to do that with mental illness. I've also been open about polyamory, which is another subject that's kind of not discussed as often. So I'm really just anything about me that is perceived as different, I'm open about it. I'm trying to just help other people do the same.
You can tell me where the boundary is, David, but I'm really curious. How does OCD in your life manifest itself? Does everything have to be in a perfect place kind of thing?
There's a lot of misconceptions about how OCD works. With me personally right now, it's not a huge deal because I have therapy and I have medicine and it doesn't – I still have obsessive thoughts every single day, but it doesn't ruin my life like it used to. But basically the way it manifests in my life is obsessive thoughts about anything. It could be anything relevant, irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Something pops into my head and then I can't get it out of my head until I perform some sort of ritual, whether it's, if it's a song that's stuck in my head, I'll listen to that song. If I just feel weird, I'll go wash my hands or brush my teeth or do another one of my common rituals. But usually there's just this persistent beating of some thought in my head, and that is kind of, sometimes it's telling me to put something in order, but sometimes it's just a thought that I had a week ago that nobody cares about. It really doesn't matter. It's just repetitive.
Like an itch that must be scratched, right? And then you can move on. Did that sort of feed into any of your work for the book? Did you find yourself on a topic and you're like, I have to thoroughly explore this or I can't relax kind of thing?
That is definitely one area in which OCD has been helpful because I tend to go overboard with everything. And I probably wouldn't be an author if I didn't have OCD because I wouldn't be so obsessed to write all these books. But when I was in college and I had my first, it was a new literature of the New Testament class. So it was basically like looking at the New Testament as if it's Shakespeare or anything else, any other literature. And every time we came across a contradiction in the Bible, I just wanted to investigate further. So I made a little note in my notepad. When I got home, I had this list of contradictions, and that list ended up being disproving Christianity because I sat there and each list item became a chapter where I wrote about this contradiction, and I just kept going and going and going, and over the course of a year, wrote the book and self-published it. And then it was picked up by a publisher later, but that's the origin of disproving Christianity was literally an obsession with contradictions in the Christian texts.
Well, I mean, it's a worthy project, and it's something, unfortunately, too many people are ignorant of. The Bible to them is perfect without error or contradiction, and you and I we're just yelling at the tops of our voices, you know, no, it's not contradiction free. No, it's not without error. Hello, you know. So I think what you do has tremendous merit. And I'll make sure and include, is there a website people can check out to find all your stuff in one place? What's the best resource?
My Facebook is good. DavidGMcAfee.com is my website. All the books are on Amazon.
All right. I'll make sure and put all those links in the description box for those who'd like to find out more. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm glad to have the opportunity to sort of introduce your work to those who may not yet be aware of it. I'll be following myself to sort of learn more, and I'll be exploring and waiting for the new book in 2017. Congrats on, is it done? I mean, are you able to breathe because it's been submitted?
Yeah. Yep. 2 weeks ago, I submitted it. I'm done with it. I'm not touching anything. The only thing I'm doing now is forwarding the publisher those little endorsements from other authors. I'm like, okay, here's another one, but that's it. I'm done.
There's no feeling comparable to that.
Not even close.
I'm done. And then it, let's go out. Let's celebrate. Let's do something. It's like this weight has been lifted. So congratulations.
That's exactly where I am now. So I really appreciate talking to you during this time because I'm happier than any other time.
All my best for the book in 2017. Of course, I'll point everybody to the Book of Gods. I'll link everything. Thanks again, David, for your time, for your efforts. And we'll talk again soon. Okay.
Thank you very much. It's great being here.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. thethinkingatheist.com.